Kia ora koutou, welcome to the panel, ONZ National. Couple of emails. Pete says, you are correct, all milk in New Zealand apart from some A2 milk is produced by Fonterra Brands, which owns Anchor and most other brands. Anchor milk is produced in a line alongside home brands. So it's the same stuff, the rest is marketing. I worked on the line. A lot about movies, and I think the person who shushed me has emailed him. For goodness sake, Wallace, I paid to watch and listen to the damn movie, not to listen to your blather, says Julian. Wallace, when a late mum took 12-year-old me and my younger sister to see the Beatles movie Help at a Te Awamutu cinema soon after its release in 1965, older youths stomping feet and shrieking prompted the projectionist to stop the film and read the riot act before resuming. We were sitting on the balcony, which was shaking dangerously. Thank you. Thank you for your feedback there. Now, today, one of the world's most popular painkillers, yet extremely dangerous if you exceed the prescribed dose. That is paracetamol. We talk about that today. Also to Sweden, where a devastating second wave has forced to rethink to their relaxed approach to COVID-19. John Byrne is a Kiwi living in New Zealand, living in Sweden. Today I'm with Jenny Morton, financial advisor for Craigs Investment Partners, and Alan Blackman. He is a professor of chemistry at AUT. First up, though, the Police Association is renewing calls for officers to be routinely armed after two gunmen shot at an officer in Northland. The officer was uninjured, but her car windscreen was damaged. The association said the police community supported routine arming of officers and it wanted that policy reviewed, and was a reminder of the huge number of firearms in criminal hands. Police Association Vice President Mike McRandall said on Morning Report the impact of these types of incidents was far-reaching within police. With us is Laura O'Connell-Rapera, Director of Action Station. And they did a survey on this earlier in the year involving 1,155 Māori and Pacifica participants. So Laura, kia ora, welcome to the panel.
Thank you for having me.
The issue crops up in times like these, doesn't it? Also back in June when a Waitemata police officer was killed amid a hail of bullets. So what do we make of the issue now?
Yeah, I mean, I think firstly what I would say is that everyone, you know, regardless of their job or their skin colour or their background or their mental health status, should be free to go about their day without the threat of gun violence. It's no secret that Action Station has been vocal advocates to disarm the police, but as part of that vision, we believe that we need to disarm the public as well, and we think that guns don't have a place in a peaceful society.
This survey is quite interesting. Shall we bring that to light? So what this survey showed quite an interesting, in fact, an overwhelming number, 91% surveyed said they were less likely to call the cops in family violence situations if police were armed.
That's right. I mean, and that's we know that the police have their own strategy, which actually does say that they want to, you know, build trust with communities, particularly Māori. The police commissioner has said that this is really important as well. And what we know from our research is that police roaming the streets with guns does not build trust. 87% of the people that we surveyed said that knowing police were armed in their community makes them feel less safe, and you can't build trust when you don't feel safe. Whereas 92% of people, which is almost everyone that we surveyed, said that they would like to see us prioritise alternative ways to keep people safe. I think at times like these, it's really important for us to hold on to our vision of a future that's free from gun violence, where we work collectively, police and communities, to find solutions that keep everyone safe. Because from our perspective, violence begets violence only means that trauma will beget trauma.
Violence begets violence. I mean, patrol vehicles routinely carry firearms in New Zealand. I mean, these are not worn by officers, but not too much of a stretch to take the gun out of the boot or wherever and place it on one's body?
No, and I mean, I guess the risk with that is that when you're in moments of high adrenaline and you have a gun on your hip versus a gun in your car, there is a higher chance of people being harmed by gun violence. And we know from the statistical data that if police routinely carry guns on their person, then it is people with mental health issues, Māori and Pacifica people, who are most likely to be unfortunately harmed by those guns. And so as long as we have that institutional bias within the police system. I would be really, really worried about routinely arming police with guns.
I'll ask the panellists to join us very, very shortly, Laura, but just one for me. Look, no one knows, do they, how many illegal guns are still on New Zealand streets. Imagine knowing that in the back of your mind as you strap on the blue vest, head out on the beat, that must be something you think about. It must weigh quite heavy on a police officer.
Absolutely. I think police have some of the hardest jobs in the world, and I think I commend the police for their bravery in a lot of the situations that they go through. I also think that we are asking the police in many cases to do the work of multiple people. You know, we're asking police to be first respondents around mental health crises. We're asking them to respond to issues of family violence. And from our perspective, we would much rather see, counsellors, social workers, paramedics, mental health workers turn up to some of those scenarios than police, so that you know, the work is shared and that we have different people with different expertise responding to these situations.
Okay. Well, Jenny Morton, what comment do you have or thought alongside Laura's here?
I think I'd be very reluctant to see the police routinely armed. And, you know, that's coming from someone who lives in Christchurch where we had the terrible mosque shooting. And, you know, you think about the bravery of the two officers who tackled that guy and brought him down knowing that he had guns. But I just feel like you're just adding to the mix if you arm the police with guns on their hips. And the other thing I'd say in agreement with Laura is when you travel overseas and you're in the airports or you're walking around the streets of some, you know, European countries and the police are armed, it's very threatening. It doesn't make you feel safer. It makes you feel
disconcerted.
A good feeling.
That's a fair point, isn't it? Alan, do you have a question for Laura or comment?
I sort of did a bit of reading around this, and I'm assuming that our police must have been armed at one stage, because way back in the sort of the 1800s, they were calling them the armed constabulary. So somebody somewhere along the line made the decision to, I guess, disarm the police. I very much agree with your statement about disarming the public. I think, you know, therein lies the problem. I mean, this question has been the subject of so many high school debates. I mean, for goodness sake, you know, I can remember debating this bloody subject way back when I was young. And I sort of feel that if we arm the police, then we've just kind of lost the battle, really, and that the crims have won. And I think it would be a much, much better thing if we crack down on the guns out there, you know. I'm sure, you know, the crims will still find other ways to inflict bodily harm or whatever. But my one question about all of this, and I believe I'm right in this, so the police officer was by herself in the car at about 4 a.m., I believe.
Yep.
Why by herself? I mean, it astonishes me that police do solo work anywhere in the country at any time. You know,
I can't comment on that particular case. Just to the general case of police being armed, and on that, I mean, Laura, you have the percentage of support for arming increasing. Actually, in the last six surveys of members from 2008 onwards, this is the Police Association. So, 66% of all police members having that view of routine arming. So, needless to say, they are seeing something in society, a change in society, that we aren't.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're on the front lines of a lot of the intersecting crises that we have in our society. You know, we know that crime is more likely to exist where there are housing crises coupled with income crises coupled with mental health crises. And so from our perspective, we need to take a societal approach to ensure that we are working towards a society in which everyone, their well-being is catered for. And I guess I really have a lot of empathy for police who are on the front lines of these issues, and I can understand where that fear is coming from. But ultimately, as I said earlier, I think that fear-based decisions where you react to violence with violence will only create more violence, and we only need to look to the United States to see that that is a reality there. And I believe that New Zealand can do things differently, and I certainly hope that's what we choose to do.
Right. Laura O'Connell-Rapara, Director of Action Station, thank you very much for that. And it is true, isn't it, when you do, or those who have been overseas in jurisdictions where you confronted a cop walking the street, police walking the street with a gun at their side, it's quite, as a New Zealander, it's quite a thing to see, isn't it?
Well, it's never normally at their side. They're normally holding these sort of semi-automatics, you know. Mm. They're holding them ready to use, and it really is jarring. You're right. You come from here, and it's just totally alien. So, I do hope that they catch the folk that did this, and I hope that they are punished appropriately. Simple as that.
It's 16 past four. The panel, RNZ National, Jenny Morton and Alan Blackman on the program this afternoon. You can get in touch with us, by the way, on email, and that is thepanel@rnz.co.nz, or you can text us 2101 or on Twitter @thepanelRNZ. The New Zealand Principals Federation, NZPF, says the new government needs to prioritise reducing violence in the classroom ahead of all other education issues. A quarter of primary teachers feel unsafe in the classroom, according to a national survey released in June of this year. And research published in May of last year revealed that 27% of primary principals had experienced violence from students. Perry Rush is the New Zealand Principals Federation President. Perry, kia ora.
Kia ora, Wallace.
So, a big enough issue for this to be prioritised above all other education issues, the issue of violence?
Look, I think so. I think the concern is that we are seeing a significant increase in violence in the classroom, and there is no answer. The system does not have an answer for these children. The only answer, we are told by the Ministry of Education, is ultimately to be able to stand down or suspend a student. And look, principals do not think those sorts of responses are appropriate. They can be very damaging for young people's future. And we think the system has to come up with a better way of dealing with this challenge.
Quite a challenge. What do you think it is, Perry? Why do you think that it's on the rise?
Well, look, I think we have significant issues with our young people. I think we see the impact of trauma in their lives. We know that in many instances there are young people in our schools that come from backgrounds where they have experienced harm, and we are seeing that on the increase. We know that that poverty in New Zealand is a very significant concern. And we see the impact of deprivation in our communities, in our schools, and part of the landscape of that challenge are young people that deal with a whole range of very serious issues that can impact very severely on their decision-making and their behaviour. And we are seeing that more than ever in our schools.
Right. Tough for students, of course, and parents, but also tough for the people who you represent, the principals. I see here that a research shows primary school leaders are more than 10 times likely to face physical attacks than the general population.
I think it's true. We had a very similar finding out of Otago University in collaboration with the Otago Primary Principals Association, highlighted a very similar set of findings around violence towards teachers and principals. And look, I think we have for a very long period of time wanted to work carefully with policies of inclusion in New Zealand schooling, and it's been appropriate to do that. But I think we have to confront this very thorny challenge of considering whether there are occasions when young people, holding young people in classrooms alongside other young people who may have very serious issues that result in them being violent towards their peers or towards their teacher, is actually an appropriate policy going forward. I think in such an instance, it's not. The system does need to resolve better ways of supporting these young people and, of course, eliminating the very negative impact that violent young people are having on their peers and on the teachers who come to work not expecting to be harmed in any way.
All right. New Zealand Principals Federation President Perry Rush, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Wallace.
What do you think of this, Alan Blackman? I mean, you're not in primary teaching, but teaching nonetheless. Quite extraordinary, really, ahead of all other education issues. Can you relate to this?
Well, no, I honestly can't. I mean, you know, when I grew up and went through school, nothing like this. My goodness, you know, you held your teachers in awe. You wouldn't go near them, for goodness sake. And the most horrifying thing about this story is that it's primary teachers, for goodness sake. A quarter of primary teachers feel unsafe. We're talking kids, what, maximum 9 or 10 years old? You know, where is this coming from?
It's obviously,
you know, socially rooted, isn't it? You know, we've got poverty, and maybe back in my day, everyone was a little bit more equal. Everyone was maybe a little bit on the poorer side. I don't know, but you know, obviously something in the last 30, 40 years has exacerbated all of this, and it's just a horrifying statistic, a really horrifying statistic. And you know, they're right. Gosh, the government has to do something about this, or somebody has to do something about this.
I'm looking at actually, this is from June of 2020. This is John Gerritsen's piece here, report saying that 25% of teachers often experience serious disruption from children in their classroom. What do you make of this, Jenny, the fact that reducing violence in the classroom comes ahead of all other education issues?
It's got to say something,
the scale of the issue, Jenny.
Yeah, I think clearly it does have, but my goodness, you know, the shame that we're at that point. You know, we're at the point where the most important thing is to resolve violence in the classroom and not to teach our children, because that's the most important thing, surely. And I agree with Alan. It's horrifying to think that we've come to this. And I was sort of racking my brains when I read this story, trying to work out why. Why are 7, 8, 9-year-olds more violent today than they were when we were kids?
Hmm.
What has changed? What has made it that way? And it really, you know, you can only trace it back to the inequality that we see in society. These kids are acting out because of things at home, outside of school.
So, for example, one Auckland principal said they were reporting more problems with 5-year-olds. A growing lack of self-regulation, maybe this is what reflective of some of the societal stresses coming through. There may well be issues at home, whatever they may be, I don't know.
Yeah, it's quite unbelievable. I'd have to say I was totally unaware of this until I read that story. You know, the scale of it, it's frightening.
4:23, you're on the panel, NZ National. We have had a big response to this next story. Let's play a little clip of the animal so to remind you what we're talking about. Is that music to your ears, or do you just hate it? What if it was 4 a.m. in the morning? In a 2-year legal wrangle, Dunedin City Council is reviewing an animals and birds bylaw which could enable it to have the power to ban roosters from residential areas or require permits to own a rooster. Noisy roosters are upsetting some residents, and currently the options for the council are issuing an abatement notice or taking the case to court. With us is the Dunedin City Council Community Services General Manager, Simon Pickford. Kia ora, Simon.
Kia ora.
Quite the issue in Dunedin, roosters in residential areas.
Yeah, it's something that we've noticed growing as a bigger problem year on year, probably for the last couple particularly. We got 34 complaints over the last 12 months, and it's one of those things that, as you say, can really drive people to distraction. Some people love roosters and other people hate them. It polarises. So it's something that we're going to take to our community to say, what do you think? Is this something we need to regulate or ban? Just to have that conversation.
I'm finding out how polarising they are, love or hate. Here's one. I love the sound of roosters, says one. One of the only positive sounds of human habitation. Having said that, they are pleasant sounding roosters, and there are those that are not. I much prefer roosters to truck engine brakes. So, look, what does Dunedin City Council do that other councils don't? Do you have a very relaxed view around roosters?
We currently do, and I think it's come to our attention that we're one of the few councils now that don't have any regulation around roosters at all. So we have an existing bylaw which says that animals can't create nuisance, and in particular roosters. So if there is a noise complaint, we can do follow-up, and we work with the complainant to try and, you know, negotiate an outcome. But essentially it comes down to the only tool we have is at the end of the day, a court proceedings, which for a rooster is overkill. So it costs a lot of money. It's very costly in terms of time and dollars. So this way, we're asking the community, are we okay with that? Or is it something we actually want to either have a permit for, or do like many councils do, and actually restrict or prohibit roosters in in sort of urban areas, in residential areas.
So I can literally be living in Dunedin, say, let's take an example. I can be living in a small suburban house in a small suburban plot in St Kilda, and I can have a rooster there, waking up at 4 a.m.
You can indeed.
Wow.
And sharing that with your neighbours. So, and that's exactly the kind of issue that we're facing. And with where you've got residential areas sort of bordering rural areas, you've got that challenge as well. So we've been fairly permissive and accepting of roosters across the city, but it's just we've noticed over the last couple of years it's really the number of complaints received has really risen. So it's time to ask that question.
Yes, so let's ask the question to the panel. Alan Blackman, what do you think?
Well, we've got a bunch of moorpooks around our place that go all night, so can you come up and do something about them, please? Because, you know...
Yeah, but you know, not as harsh as roosters, right?
I did like the thing that you were going to get people to have permits to have roosters. Is a permit going to stop a rooster, you know, doing its thing? I mean, I don't think they can read too well.
I think the permit system's really, some councils use that as a kind of, it becomes a property-by-property situation. So if you've got a larger section in a residential area and maybe you've got more scattered neighbours, it's that kind of question that we're going to ask. Is this something that is that the appropriate tool to use, or is it as an outright ban, which is quite draconian? That's something that is pretty extreme, whether that's more appropriate.
We had Jenny.
So I think that one of my neighbours might have had a rooster for a while. I haven't heard it in a while, so maybe they had to get rid of it. And actually, when I was talking about this in the office, people thought that Christchurch Council didn't permit roosters. I don't mind the sound of a rooster. It never bothered me particularly much. I always smile when we hear things like, you got 34 complaints. So 34 people complained. How many other people didn't complain? We only ever hear from the complainants, not from the people who don't care.
Good call.
that's true. I mean, I would say that the point of this report that we took to the council yesterday is really to have that conversation, to hear that comment that, look, I love roosters. If we get majority of the community coming back saying, nope, we're totally happy, we don't mind, 34 people who are complaining are in the minority, then that's something that we will consider, and council will then make a decision on whether a bylaw is the most appropriate thing to deal with this issue. But, you know, as I say, it's been a significant increase in the number of complaints, and when these complaints do come, they're often people at the end of their tether, and they really, drives them to distraction. Yeah. And it's, as we said before, very polarizing, and some people love them, some people hate them. So for the people, for those 34 people, it is a real, real problem. It's not a sort of casual, there's an occasional barking dog. This is a rooster that goes off in the morning and all day sometimes. So it can be a serious problem for people.
Yeah. Simon, thank you very much for that. That's Simon Pickford in Dunedin there, Dunedin City Council Community Services Manager, General Manager. So if you are a fan of roosters, move to Dunedin where they'll be liberally, they have the keys to the city. Julian says, I love the sound of a rooster sizzling in a pan with 11 herbs and spices. Jonathan in Kandala says, Wallace, ban leaf blowers. Ban mulchers, ban motorised lawnmowers, ban water blasters before you ban the roosters. Fair point.
Yep.
Quite a bit of response regarding this one might get people going. Carrie-Anne says, I think we blame poverty, but I have a friend who's a teacher. Parenting is a big problem. Helicopter parents, sense of entitlement, discipline, respect for self and others. This across all society, economic groups. Stop blaming the poor and look at our own parenting, please. Another one here. I'm a teacher. It's not easy. There's a lot of violence where you have to restrain. There's property distraction, there's very bad language, F off you, such and such and such. A lot of dysfunctional families with drug and alcohol issues. Children, alcohol, fetal, some five-year-olds still wear nappies. I can go on. Oh, so this teacher here is at the sharp end of this issue. It is 29 away to 5 o'clock. You are on the panel, RNZ National. We're back after the headlines.